Good morning, everyone. Nice to see each of you here and online. I might repeat a few things that Sue said, but we repeat things in the Dhamma because it takes more than once. So, as Sue said in her introduction to the Brahma Viharas, they are interrelated and they complement each other. They're a dwelling place where the mind is safe and protected from the poisons of greed, hatred, and delusion. We flourish in the light of these qualities, and we start with metta as the foundation, the primary element from which the three other qualities are derived. We all have love within us. We'll work with that truth today. What are the qualities of metta? Metta is a Pali word that comes from the root maitri, meaning friendliness. We commonly hear metta defined as loving kindness. Sharon Salzberg's book called Loving Kindness, The Revolutionary Art of Happiness, which came out in 1995, made that definition popular. But the word love has a lot of implications and can be a challenging concept to live up to. Some other qualities of metta might be easier for us to focus on. Friendliness, goodwill, warmth are other names for metta. Many of us simply use the Pali word metta and let its meaning evolve for us. Our understanding of metta can grow from our own experience. I'll be using all these terms today. You can try them out and see which ones resonate for you. I was just noticing recently that when I offered something to a friend instead of keeping it for myself, and my friend seemed so glad to receive it, that I felt a warmth in my heart that made me feel happy. Most of us would call that generosity, but isn't it also kindness or caring? It's probably more helpful for our purposes to be inclusive rather than exclusive with our definitions. One of my Brahma Vihara teachers, Adrian Ross, says we want to make it easy to grow a field of goodwill so that kindness can become our default. I hope you'll see today that the practice of metta encourages ease and comfort. What metta is not, the hindrances and the poisons. It's not uncommon as we practice developing metta and the other Brahma Viharas to run into the hindrances. In spite of our good intentions, we're going to have encounters with aversion, with our dislikes, and with our preferences. A patient and non-judging attitude is crucial. Instead of being harsh and critical with ourselves, we need to remember that we're doing the best we're able. And when the hindrances or defilements get in our way, we can recognize that they are the way. In fact, Christina Feldman says that metta is an insight practice because it helps us turn toward and befriend difficult experiences. An attitude of metta helps us stay near to difficult experiences long enough to see them clearly and understand them. Near and far enemies. Another consideration we need to be aware of with our practice is that each Brahma Vihara has a near enemy and a far enemy. Recognizing the near enemy is used to help us discern the difference between the true metta that we want to cultivate and a quality that may look like metta but is actually not metta. The near enemy of metta is attachment by the senses. At first we may feel this is true love, but with attachment it grows into its opposite, characterized by clinging, controlling, and fear of loss. We need to be alert to attachment this near enemy as we practice, because it can corrupt metta. The far enemy of metta is, not surprisingly, hatred. Sometimes we can be seduced by hatred. We can come up with what seems like very good reasons to hate. But the Buddha was clear. In the Dhammapada, in the Yamakavaga, which is a list of opposites, the Buddha said, hatred does not cease by hatred, but only by love. This is the eternal law. In the practice of metta, it's important to respect the degree to which hatred is the far enemy of metta. I have another quote from modern times from Martin Luther King Jr. on this topic. He said, I decided to stick to love. Hate is too great a burden to bear. So remembering the destructiveness of the far enemy of each Brahmavihara is an important part of cultivating these heart practices. Touching our heart. So how do we cultivate metta? We start by asking the question, what touches my heart? What image or experience can you call up right now which sparks warm feelings or friendliness in you? This is important to find the internal felt sense of metta inside of you. Pema Chodron says, we need to have faith in the capacity of our heart. She says, when you begin to touch your heart or let your heart be touched, you begin to discover that it is bottomless, that it doesn't have any resolution, that this heart is huge, vast, and limitless. You begin to discover how much warmth and gentleness is there, as well as how much space. When practicing with metta, we need to make a point of noticing what stimulates our heart and appreciate its capacity to open wider. One cautionary word, however, as we're thinking about what metta is and isn't, it's not a spiritual bypass. We don't want to get attached to the pleasant metta feelings of warmth and friendliness so much that we ignore or gloss over experiences that should be investigated further. Friendly curiosity and a balance between wisdom and compassion is important to maintain. More ways to practice metta. There are two primary ways to cultivate metta, through concentration and through insight and investigation. Getting in touch with the felt sense of metta in our body is a form of investigation. The concentration method involves repeating groups of simple phrases. This is a way of grounding the attention and sustaining it so that the mind doesn't get distracted by the proliferation of non-metta thoughts. The phrases are a form of anchor for the mind. The repetition of phrases builds the intention to be kind, to express friendliness, because the Buddha tells us that it is the thoughts that we think most often that the mind will return to with greater and greater ease. To some degree, we can rewire the brain and weaken old default habits like judging, comparing, and fault-finding, and create new, more nourishing paths that strengthen an attitude of goodwill. In addition, the practice of repeating the phrases leads us to send the phrases out to a wider and wider community of beings. We expand beyond our inner circle to include people we don't know so well. And in this way, the concentration practices encourage us toward boundless, unconditional love. Following this formal concentration practice of repeating phrases doesn't feel helpful for some people. It feels too prescribed, and they don't want to repeat phrases. They don't feel in the moment. There are other ways to foster an attitude of loving kindness. You can use mindfulness to be aware of your attitude toward experiences in general and practice being close to, turning toward, and bringing friendliness to all that arises. Christina Feldman described, practicing with the precepts, the paramis, and the Eightfold Path also cultivate our beautiful heart qualities and the intention not to cause harm. Cultivating metta for ourselves and ultimately for all beings. There's a traditional sequence to offering metta. The sequence begins with offering metta to ourselves. We begin with ourselves because it's hard to love others if we don't love ourselves. However, sometimes it's hard to offer metta to ourselves at first. And we can start, if that's the case, with a child or a pet or a friend, a spiritual being, or a benefactor. It's most important for the experience to feel comfortable and encouraging. When your metta practice has developed more, you can move to offering metta to yourself. We've provided a list of metta phrases on the resource page and also as a handout for this day long. And in a few minutes, we'll have a guided meditation using the phrases to offer metta to different groups of people. But before we do that, I want to share an excerpt from the Karaniya Sutta, which is the Buddha's words on loving kindness. And that's a handout, and it's also on the resource list online. And this is what one thing the Buddha says in that. He says, it shows the ultimate intent of the Buddha. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be at ease, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none. With boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world. So that's the ultimate goal. So we have an intention to wish goodwill for ourselves and others without preference and without being attached to the results of our wishes. We're cultivating the felt sense of goodwill coming from within and being aware of it there, and then extending it outward, eventually to the entire world. Our wish isn't dependent on whether we or anyone else has earned or deserves our goodwill. We don't compare or judge or try to fix ourselves or anyone else. And it's not really necessary that we actually feel full of goodwill when we offer metta. It's our intention that's the most important thing. By returning again and again to this intention to spread well-being, we are replacing the ill will and aversion with kindness and friendliness. The phrases are simple, with basic wishes for well-being, using words like safe, healthy, happy, at ease, and they're grouped into three or four wishes. You can use images too. One person visualized showers of light, another rays of color surrounding the person they were sending metta to. After you've practiced specific phrases or images for a while, you can create new ones. During the Brahmavihara retreat I attended a few years ago, I learned some new mudita sympathetic joy phrases. And they were, how wonderful you are in your being. I'm delighted you are here. I like that message a lot, and I use those phrases to express my appreciation of others. And then I thought I might borrow the words to use as metta for myself. So I inserted the pronoun I in place of you, and the wish became, how wonderful I am in my being. I am delighted I am here. That made me happy, and I liked focusing on being because it conveyed to me the idea that I'm good enough just as I am. I don't need to evaluate myself based on my accomplishments. And I realized I needed this to be a friend to myself. So we can be creative, mix and match with the phrases, and I encourage you to be creative and make your metta practice work for you. So we will begin. Let's see, where are we here in the timing? Oh, no, I don't have to begin yet. Okay. So we start with cultivating friendliness towards ourselves, a mentor or a benefactor, a friend or family member, a pet, beings who are easy for us to connect to. And then we move out of the near and dear sphere to the neutral person. This is a familiar stranger, someone we might run across in daily life and overlook because we don't see them as important to us. That might be the person delivering a package or out walking in the neighborhood, maybe a clerk in the store. We don't know about their personal lives, but we take the opportunity to connect with them anyway. And we think, how might this person be just like me? Do they want to be happy? I'm sure they do. Do they suffer? I'm sure they do. Just as I want to be happy, and just as I don't want to suffer. We're cultivating a sense of our common humanity. Remembering the Buddha's words on loving kindness, we're led to let go of preferences and prejudices and to open our hearts more and more. Opening to the neutral person is an important step in this direction toward a boundless heart. And we'll have a chance to practice with offering metta to a neutral person during the guided meditation this morning. Although the traditional sequence for offering metta is self, benefactor, family member or friend, neutral person, difficult person, and then all beings, we won't practice with offering metta to the difficult person today, or to all beings. We'll just go as far as the neutral person because of time. Just to know that that's where it's heading, so that we can work beyond our irritations and aversions and defenses. The Dalai Lama says, the reality is that nobody is 100% bad. This is talking about the difficult person. They must have some good qualities if you search long enough. So the tendency to see someone as completely negative is due to our own perception based on our own mental projection rather than the true nature of the individual.